You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we are back here on Purple Friday with Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. Matthew, another busy week for the Ravens during this free agency period. How you feeling?
Not awful, but a little tired of being in the house at this point, but excited for the rest of the offseason and the draft to come.
Yeah, the draft is quickly approaching, and as we head into kind of, you know, the second and third waves of free agency, the Ravens have made a few moves, sending guys out, bringing their own back. But I guess the biggest move of the past week, you know, aside from the Jimmy Smith signing, which we'll get into in a second, would be shipping off Chris Wormley in a 2021 seventh round pick to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a 2021 fifth. Were you at all surprised by this move, and what does it mean for the Baltimore roster going forward?
Well, I wasn't necessarily shocked by the idea that they shipped off Chris Wormley. I mean, once you added Calais Campbell, you added Michael Brockers, you re-signed Jihad Ward, you re-signed Justin Ellis, you already have Brandon Williams on the inside as well. So, you know, Wormley was kind of a guy that was the odd man out on that defensive front already. It might have come down between him and maybe Dalen Mack for a final spot type of thing, even though they play two different positions on the defensive line. So, reality is Wormley was going to fight for a spot or might not even make the 90-man roster or the 53-man roster when everything came down to it. So getting anything back in return for him is a primo deal. The fact that he went to the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, probably speaks volumes about how Baltimore feels about him. There's a reason why you don't send guys to a division rival. And if you do, you're usually saying you are saying you're not worried about facing them again in a few months. And for Wormley, you know, that seems to be the case. The more important thing is they freed up a bunch of cap space for themselves this year, which was the big thing. And then again, was able to go ahead and get an additional fifth round pick in the next year's draft, which should help them kind of as they continue to retool.
Yeah, definitely. DaCosta known for flipping players for value, and I think they got pretty good value out of Chris Wormley there. But Matthew, another interesting tidbit is you mentioned Michael Brockers, and it seems the signing has been held up due to a high ankle sprain he suffered in the season finale when he was still with the Los Angeles Rams. What have you heard about that, and is it jeopardizing his ability to sign, and do you think that it could potentially void the deal altogether?
Well, first and foremost, we have to lay out the idea that the coronavirus pandemic has kind of made signings in the NFL difficult. And if you've been paying attention to any of the moves that have been happening over the last, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks, you've been noticing a lot of teams aren't necessarily announcing deals. They're saying, you know, reports say we've agreed to terms, which really, again, points to the idea that everything being a little in flux right now is kind of making things a little bit odd. Now, what I've heard is that Brockers got an independent doctor to give him a physical. It raised some red flags. That being said, it's an independent doctor. It's one that, you know, it isn't Baltimore's training staff. It might not even necessarily be a sports training a doctor of that type either. So who entirely knows how big those flags are? If they are major flags or ultimately if it's just something that, look, it'll happen down the line. It's not a big deal. They haven't announced it yet because he, technically speaking, quote unquote, hasn't passed a physical yet. But it's just all, you know, the checks in the mail type of thing. The fact that they were interested in Ndamukong Suh is a little bit of a concern in my eyes. You typically don't go after another defensive tackle like that if you're sure that the guy that you already agreed to terms with is going to come to town. He's going to go ahead and be locked into that type of a deal. You then don't go ahead and add a guy who is going to either have to play in front of him or behind him, but you don't add an additional guy, an additional star player in that role. So it gives me a little bit of pause in the fact that Baltimore was reportedly interested in Sue. Again, what it means for Brockers long-term will really have to be determined once they're able to get a doctor they know and trust in there. They're able to go ahead and see him and really kind of work him out in that way. It might mean maybe not a 3-year, $30 million deal. Maybe they rework that deal to be shorter term. Maybe they make it more incentive based. They'll figure something out to keep Brockers in the mix, because I don't think they want to get rid of him. Certainly after letting Michael Pierce go to the Minnesota Vikings, there aren't really a lot of other options on there. And you know, if Brockers is able to play, he's going to play. Is kind of my mindset as of right now, but that is something to keep an eye on over the next month or so, as hopefully the world kind of returns to normal and we see some doctors getting their hands on these guys and being able to officially make signings.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, with Brockers, you got one of the best run-stuffing defensive tackles out there on the market. And injuries happen every day in football. He's only missed one game since 2016. He's been relatively healthy throughout his career. So as this kind of goes on, I also expect that this thing is going to end up going through. But one deal that was also announced by Baltimore, the re-signing of Jimmy Smith to a one-year up to $6 million deal. The base salary is around $3.5 million. Matthew, just how important was it to get Jimmy Smith back in a Ravens uniform?
I think it's vitally important. And I know a lot of Ravens fans either love him or hate him. And at times, I get both sides. You know, Smith has not been the healthiest cornerback over his career. He's had a number of suspensions. He's missed a lot of time. But when he's healthy and when he's at his best, he really is a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback. And what that allows Baltimore to do is again, you have experienced depth behind guys like Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters. It allows you to tailor who you have on the field to who you're facing. And for a guy like Don Martindale, the defensive coordinator of Baltimore, having that flexibility is vitally important. And we saw it last season when they blitzed a bunch, when they were able to move guys around. I mean, Matthew Judon went from outside linebacker to inside linebacker on certain plays. We've seen guys drop back into coverage that you would never expect drop back into coverage. All those things help a team, help a defense create confusion, create better matchups for themselves. And in a league that is as pass happy as the NFL this generation is, you can never have too many really good cornerbacks. And like I said, Jimmy Smith, when he's at his best, is a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback. Getting him back for a one-year deal allows them to hopefully continue forward this year, to get a little bit better this year. Hopefully see him retire in purple and black, which would be amazing. And again, just more important experience depth in that secondary, which over the years we've seen Baltimore is absolutely needed.
Yeah, and another one of those secondary depth signings, Anthony Levine, a core special teamer, the captain of that special teams unit, with Baltimore also re-signing Chris Moore, two guys they value greatly on special teams. How important were those guys getting back in Baltimore uniforms?
Well, Levine was incredibly important, and a guy that, again, maybe not a lot of people in Baltimore even know exists, but has been a guy that has been vitally important on special teams. I mean, he's played a majority of the snaps on special teams, but as well, he plays a lot of snaps on defense as well. And Baltimore kind of uses him as a strong safety slash linebacker. So they'll move him around, especially in their more pass happy or more pass heavy coverages and schemes. That way, they'll kind of bring him down as a cover linebacker of sorts to be able to do that and maybe get away from having to have, as we've talked previously, two or three or four really solid inside linebackers. You can move a guy like Levine down from safety into linebacker and be able to do some special things there. So, again, just like with Jimmy Smith, it's flexibility. These are guys that they know. These are guys that know them. These are guys that you can bring in immediately. They already know the playbook. They already know who they're playing against or playing with. So just that continuity there from a defensive standpoint really is important. And makes that transition a little bit easier when, again, you already have a guy that you already know and a guy that already knows you. So Levine is a great signing. Chris Moore, I think once I finally see the specifics of his deal, my guess is he's brought in to kind of compete with DeAnthony Thomas for that return specialist job. Baltimore didn't get a lot of great things out of any of their guys last year when it came to returning kickoffs and punts. And at this point, my guess is they're going to throw as many guys as they possibly can at this offseason, this training camp, when we eventually get to that point, and they're going to try to remedy that situation. And again, getting a guy like Moore back, especially if it's on a cost-effective deal, gives you that familiarity. You know what he brings to the table. And even if he's not necessarily a starter, even if he's not going to play a lot on offense, you know what he brings on special teams. And you're not going to find a coach that probably values special teams in the NFL as much as John Harbaugh does.
Yeah, and the Ravens are going to have to work and continue to work around that tight salary cap situation they have and bring the guys back that know the system, especially in this weird era we're in right now with the coronavirus. You know, it's already affected Michael Brockers' deal, but with not knowing when OTAs are going to come, when the offseason programs are going to come, having the continuity, as you mentioned, is extremely important. But more free agency talk is on the way. Stay tuned, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the second segment of this Locked On Ravens Purple Friday edition episode. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Matthew Stevens. And Matthew, the Ravens have added a few pieces, but they've also lost a few. We've talked about Michael Pierce and Seth Roberts, but Josh Bynes and Patrick Owosso, two linebackers that the Ravens maybe had hoped to retain, maybe one more than the other. But Josh Bynes heads to a division rival in the Cincinnati Bengals, while Patrick Owosso goes to the New York Jets to reunite with C.J. Mosley, where playing next to him, he played his best football. The Ravens now have L.J. Fort on their roster, Chris Board, Otara Alaka. But with those two guys departing, what kind of impact is that going to have on this Baltimore roster?
Well, it's a huge one. I mean, they were interested in bringing back Peanut or Bynes. Again, as we kind of mentioned with these other guys they brought back, for that continuity, for that experience depth, for those guys that they know, even if they're not necessarily going to start, the hope was to bring them back just to really round out this roster with the guys they already know and then try to improve from there. But more importantly, go into the draft kind of knowing, hey, at the very least, we've got a baseline that we feel comfortable with. If we can get better, great. If not, that's okay too. So that's a huge one. What I will say in terms of Bynes and Peanut, you know, them going to a division rival and going to the Jets kind of makes sense. I mean, division rival in Bengals and the Jets makes sense, mainly because, well, you know, the Jets at this point are really just the walking Baltimore Ravens, but in New Jersey this time. And Cincinnati Bengals really need to get better, and they need a guy that they can count on to be a good locker room leader, and that's going to be a guy like Bynes. So it's not bad moves for either one of them, but it puts pressure on Baltimore, I think, to either get a guy after the draft, which you can never count on a guy getting released or coming down in his salary requirements, or no, just even being as good as Bynes or Peanut was going to be. The flip side of that is you know, maybe Baltimore has a guy in mind when it comes to the 2020 NFL draft, and they're able to grab a guy like Kenneth Murray or a guy like Patrick Queen, and they feel comfortable with that and putting him next to L.J. Fort, and then they can add a depth signing later on to kind of just round out the inside linebacker group. That might be their hope at this point, but it puts more pressure on them the more time that elapses without getting guys in place, getting that baseline. It just, again, it's going to put more pressure on Baltimore and Eric DaCosta to make something happen. And when teams get desperate, that's when teams tend to make mistakes. So you hope they have something in mind, but the fact they were interested in re-signing Bynes and or Peanut, I think kind of points to them not really having a guarantee in mind later on down the line either.
Yeah, exactly. And moving on to guys who are on the Ravens free agent list who still have yet to be re-signed yet, Pernell McPhee, Domata Peko, Brendan Trawick, Parker Einger, Ronis Grasu. Are you looking at any of those guys and saying, well, Baltimore should bring them back?
Not really. I mean, Baltimore at this point, I think, has to feel pretty comfortable with the guys they already brought in. I mean, the guys that were important to them that made a huge impact last year, they've brought back, or in the case of Domata Peko, they upgraded. So again, you're not necessarily all that concerned about bringing a guy like that back. So no, I mean, I think they're pretty much done until the NFL draft happens. And then again, they'll be able to maybe fill some needs or bring guys back in as they feel they need to. But the guys they have right now, I think, are the guys that they're going to keep. And they're going to let the rest of these all kind of figure themselves out, or maybe potentially bring the guys they can back on for later on down the line in the 90-man roster, and then maybe the practice squad again, Randon Corselius, Parker Anger is a good option as well. Fish Smithson is another guy that could potentially be in that type of a category for Baltimore in a few months.
I think so, too. I mean, as the rosters expand, you get to those 90 players. Again, the continuity, very important for the Ravens to have. But people who the Ravens could potentially bring in who played for different teams last year. Still a lot of good options out there. Jadeveon Clowney seems to headline that list, but there are others such as Clay Matthews and in the bunch. Out of guys who are still on the free agent market, who do you expect Baltimore to maybe make a run at?
I still absolutely think that Clay Matthews is a guy that they're going to have interest in. I mean, they had interest in him last year. I don't see why they wouldn't have interest in him now. They still have a need there. But again, I think a lot of that stuff's probably most teams at this point, I think, are saying, look, we're done for right now. Unless a guy is willing to come down dramatically in price, let's figure out where we sit after the draft. Let's see what comes available. So that way, again, we're not necessarily signing a guy that we like in Clay Matthews now, but then a better guy comes available in 2 months after the draft. He gets cut by somebody, and we have a much better option for a cheaper deal. So that's, largely speaking, that's where the NFL is at right now, especially as we mentioned earlier with the coronavirus pandemic kind of holding up signings and medical tests and all that stuff. Some of these guys that are still left unsigned are unsigned because, well, they're coming off injuries or they have some other issues that need to be resolved and they can't be right now. So I like Clay Matthews. I think he's the guy that if out of anybody that Baltimore is probably keeping a close eye on. While I think most Ravens fans would love me to say Clowney, the reality is he's just going to want too much. There's a reason why he hasn't signed yet. If he was dirt cheap and willing to come in for a short-term deal and make things work on a salary cap hit, he probably would have been signed a week ago at this point. So, yeah, again, I would look at Clay Matthews probably being the best option out of who is available right now. Before the draft and then after the draft, everything's going to get mixed back up again. So that's that. We'll kind of revisit at that point.
And someone who the Ravens traded for, Calais Campbell, had a press conference or a conference call with some Baltimore reporters yesterday, and he mentioned a few decent points that I wanted to talk to you about, Matthew. First of all, he took less money to facilitate a trade to go to Baltimore, said that his agent was a little unhappy about it, but said that the chemistry was clear when mingling with the Ravens coaches, the players at the Pro Bowl. Wasn't around him for long, but in that time, he said that he felt that there was something special in Baltimore and is very happy to be in Baltimore. What did you take away from those comments?
Well, it's kind of what we've talked about all offseason long so far, and that's, you know, Baltimore's coaching staff being in the Pro Bowl certainly helps. You get a chance to get those pending free agents, get a chance to talk to them and just, hey, this is what things are like in Baltimore. Not saying, not tampering, not saying you should come, not doing anything like that. But if you were to have an option later on down the line, just remember how cool we were here at the Pro Bowl. That certainly helps. And then just the way that Baltimore runs the organization, you know, from Steve Bisciotti all the way down, Ozzie Newsome, when he was in that role, Eric DaCosta now, Harbaugh, both Greg Roman and Don Martindale, those guys all carry some weight with them. They all have positive relationships out in the NFL. Eric Weddle being a great representation, Tony Jefferson being a great representation. When you have guys speak so highly of the organization and you're maybe toward the end of your career, like Campbell is, this is your chance to go, look, I want to go to an organization that's going to appreciate me. I want to go to an organization that's going to take care of me, that's going to maybe give me what I want to have happen and willing to work with me on that. And more importantly, we're close to winning a Super Bowl. So those few things all kind of factor in, and you get a guy that is a little bit more willing to go, hey, I'll take less money, but I'm going to go there. I'm going to play the right way. I'm going to get taken care of the right way for a few years. And either I can figure out to retire or we'll remedy that at that situation. But I have a legitimate chance to walk out with a Super Bowl ring on my finger. And, you know, in this league, some guys care about that. Other guys don't. But I think you find toward the end of careers, you know, guys tend to sign with teams that are more likely to earn them a ring in spite of cash, because they've already made their big blockbuster money. Now they just want to have a ring. They want to solidify their status.
Yeah, and I think with Calais Campbell, he said that winning at this point of his career, it's a priority, and that makes a lot of sense. He's entering the final few years of his NFL career, and that's not to say he's not a great player, because he's still one of the best defensive linemen in the NFL. But, you know, you're right. Some people care about the money, others don't. So something to be said, something to be heard with Calais Campbell's comments there. But we're going to transition into the draft when we get back from our final segment break, so stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of this Purple Friday Locked On Ravens episode. Kevin Ostreicher is still hanging with Matthew Stevens, and we talked about free agency, got into a lot of different things. But now, heading into the draft as it is quickly approaching, the Ravens have a few key needs, one of them being the wide receiver position. The Ravens have seen guys like Emmanuel Sanders sign elsewhere. They've seen guys like Robbie Anderson sign elsewhere. People thought that the Ravens could be in on those veteran free agents, others not so much. As you look ahead to the draft, Matthew, do you see any scenario where the Ravens could potentially trade up for one of what people are calling the big three, Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, or CeeDee Lamb?
Could I see that scenario happening? Yeah, I mean, it certainly could, and I would never rule anything out with Baltimore. But at the same time, they really haven't done it very often. And when they have, you know, I mean, trades up in the first round especially are pricey. Especially if you're moving from 28, even up to 20, you know, that's going to cost you a lot of picks. It's going to cost you a lot of premium picks that you could potentially fill out your roster in a lot of other ways than grabbing just one guy. So either you'd have to be in love with that guy and think that that's a game changer, think that that guy is going to get you to a Super Bowl, or you have to not like what's coming in the second and third rounds, because those are the rounds you're going to trade for in order to move up a few picks. That being said, is I don't think a wide receiver, at least at this point, has proven that he is the game changer, that he is a Super Bowl winner. Quarterback, yes. Maybe an offensive lineman, a good left tackle, maybe. A star defensive player like a pass rusher, yeah. Wide receiver, though, I mean, look, Amari Cooper was with two different teams last year, and neither one of them made the playoffs. So, I think it speaks volumes about positioning in those things. So do I see it happening? No. Could it happen? Certainly. If Baltimore feels like they're so close and they just need that number one guy, and a guy like CeeDee Lamb falls down into the 20s, you know, Baltimore would be silly to not at least make a few phone calls and go, hey, what is it going to cost? What is CeeDee Lamb going to cost us? But that, again, being said, like I mentioned, I don't think it's going to be worth the package of picks that Baltimore is going to have to give up in order to move up even just a few spots.
Keeping with the trading scenarios for Baltimore, trading up, you're right, it's going to cost a few picks. Do you see Baltimore potentially trading back, maybe picking up an extra 2 second round picks and just, you know, going all in the second round because this draft is so deep?
Absolutely. I mean, that's Baltimore's game plan pretty much every year, if we're being honest. The amount of times that I've had to write up articles about, oh, they traded away their first round pick, or they moved back. The year that they you know, drafted Lamar Jackson, they made a ton of moves in the first round specifically, obviously picking up both Hayden Hurst and Lamar Jackson. So trading back really is, if you're going to bet on anything, that's probably the thing I would bet on for the Ravens, is they're going to move backwards, especially in a draft that is as deep as this one is. You know, if they like Patrick Queen, but they like Kenneth Murray as well, maybe not as much, and both are on the board at 28, maybe you go ahead and trade down and see if you can't get either later in the first round or early in the second round, still get one of those guys that you really like, but pick up more draft equity. Or if there's a bunch of pass rushers available, again, drop back. Or if there's a bunch of wide receivers that you like that aren't necessarily first-round talents anymore, you drop back. You get the value from a team that wants to move up and wants to get a quarterback, or wants to get the player that they love but don't think will be available there. Meanwhile, you rake it in, and if you can get an extra second-round pick, that does a huge amount of things for Baltimore in terms of either being able to move up and around in the second round in order to get guys that they like, or just get more of them. In any team, for any team in any draft, more shots on goal is going to net you more chances at a star player. So even if not all of them will make this roster, don't be terribly shocked if Baltimore goes ahead and moves back in the first round in an effort to get a few of these guys, a few wide receivers, a few linebackers, a few pass rushers in order to really round out their roster at some of these holes.
Yeah, the second round is going to be extremely important for Baltimore, and whether that is they decide to trade back into that second round and, you know, maybe have four or five picks in that second round, or if they decide to just keep what they have, take someone at 28, and then have 55 and 60. Matthew, when you look at the second round prospects that could potentially fall into the early second round or players who could still be available at 55 or 60, who are some of your favorites for Baltimore?
Well, Cesar Ruiz is a guy that you know, we've heard his name potentially creep up into the first round, but we've also seen it down into the second. Raekwon Davis, another guy, while Baltimore is pretty well set on the defensive line, is a guy that I think they might really like and might be willing to stash for the future. Denzel Mims is another good one. Neville Gallimore is another good guy. One of the guys that I think I'm most interested in, Harrison. I just could not remember his name for a minute. Baltimore needs a linebacker, and if both of their top options in maybe Murray and Queen are off the board at 28, Harrison's a guy they might be able to get in the middle of the second round for a pretty good value, everything considered, and might still be able to get, you know, maybe not the upper echelon of talent at linebacker, but might still be able to get a really good, solid, immediate starter in the second round, which would benefit them greatly.
Yeah, I think so too, because, you know, you mentioned how deep this class is. If Baltimore likes a guy and they're a potentially maybe a first round prospect, a mid late first round prospect that's fallen to the 40s, the 45, even Baltimore can trade up because they can use 55 and use a couple fourth round, fifth round picks and still have the ability to pick someone at 60. But Matthew, finally, as we get into other positions of need, talking about the offensive line, you mentioned inside linebacker, also some edge guys. Who are some late round prospects that you could see Baltimore falling in love with and trying to find some diamonds in the rough with?
I wouldn't necessarily say late round guys. Toward the end of this draft, everything kind of gets a little bit muddled. But a guy that I know a lot of people are interested in, I'm maybe not as high on, but I think is a perfect, you know, if you can get him in the fourth round, might be a good option, is Willie Gay Jr. from Mississippi State. A guy that just plays with a huge motor, just nonstop running around, nonstop just flailing, willing to hit somebody, willing to do all those things, but isn't necessarily the quickest processor on the field, isn't necessarily the most disciplined player on the field in terms of matching what you're supposed to be doing. But Baltimore is the place to kind of refine that raw talent into here's what you need to do. Let's teach you. Let's get you into this playbook. Let's get you around these veterans. They're going to force you to do it. And in 2-3 years, you have a star guy that is just super athletic, and is able to do kind of everything. Those are those guys you get in the fourth ish round, that end up turning out to be star players in a handful of years, much like Matthew Judon was in 2017. Clearly turned out pretty well for Baltimore by grabbing a guy like that later on.
Yeah, definitely. Baltimore, so much success finding those guys in the later rounds that can really contribute, you know, those unheralded guys that aren't very well known. You know, nobody knew who Matthew Judon was, or at least very little amount of people knew who Matthew Judon was. You know, Za'Darius Smith, I could talk about it for hours, how many late round prospects they have found that have turned into very solid contributors, and we're not even getting into the undrafted free agents. But Matthew, that's all I have for you today. Thank you for coming on the show once again. And when we talk next week, we'll be a week closer to the NFL draft, and hopefully the Ravens have shored up their roster just a little bit more.
Hey, absolutely.
Definitely. Thank you for coming again, Matthew. When we get back on Monday after taking our 2-day hiatus here on Locked On Ravens, we're going to get into another mock draft Monday. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you on Monday.